The show will begin shortly.
It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat if you want to participate on our stellar conversation on Twitter. Good morning, everybody. Hope you survived the snow yesterday. You drove safely. We are back for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. He is Lance Meadow. Still talking a lot about the Super Bowl on Sunday. We touched mostly on that yesterday. If you want to call up, talk about more about the game today, that is fine. Anything you want to discuss in regards to the teams, the game, relating it back to the Giants, it's all fair game. But Lance, where I want to open up today is something that happened on Saturday, and that was Michael Strahan making it into the Hall of Fame after a week of controversy surrounding it because big bloviating Warren Sapp decided to run his mouth all week.
It's an interesting way to describe him.
I think it's a pretty accurate way of describing him. And he decided to run his mouth all week, but Strahan does get in, and very well deserving. Should have got in last year, in my opinion, and another New York Football Giant in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, the fact that he has the single-season sack record, the fact that he was one of the best pass rushers to play the game, and the fact that he helped the Giants win a Super Bowl title, strong enough resume to earn a trip to Canton, Ohio. Warren Sapp, not to necessarily get involved in the war of words between the two, is also deserving of being in the Hall of Fame, considering the numbers he put up as a defensive tackle. But that's certainly a whole other debate that I'm sure they're having on TampaBayBuccaneers.com or some of the other teams that he's been associated with.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because one of the things I did last week, I was running the audio board for the Booger and Rich Show, which is Booger McFarland and this other guy, Rich something, I don't know, down there in Tampa Bay.
Seems like you were very into the show, by the way.
The audio was fine. That's all they got to worry
about. I'm glad to hear.
The bottom line is that they were talking, and they really did. They consider John Lynch to having a better chance of getting to the Hall of Fame than Michael Strahan, which was a joke. But I kind of took a poll. I was walking around. I was keeping an eye on a Washington, D.C. radio station. I was keeping an eye on a couple different from different areas. And I was surprised to see that most people outside of New York really didn't consider Strahan as much of a lock as the people in New York did. And a lot of people really, you know, thought Marvin Harrison had a better chance of getting in than Michael Strahan. A lot of people thought Tony Dungy had a better chance of getting in than Michael Strahan. But Strahan gets in ahead of all of them. Andre Reed gets in, which I thought was well-deserving. But it's funny. I don't think people outside of New York appreciate how good Strahan was for so long here with the Giants. I just thought it was very interesting.
Walter Jones is another guy that I think has gone under the radar during the course of his career.
Great play.
And deserved to go in the Seahawks tackle. So that was also nice to see that somebody connected to, coincidentally, the team that won the Super Bowl. It's tough. I mean, to me, this was an impressive class. Marvin Harrison, you know, also, to me, warrants an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. And he will eventually get in because clearly his numbers jump off the page, and anybody else who's played with Peyton Manning has a really sufficient resume. Michael Strahan, you know, is associated with the New York area. I think a lot of people now associate him with the media business, given his opportunities with the former show that was called Regis and Kelly. So, you know, right now,
now
I think
now it's Kelly and Michael.
Kelly and Michael.
Way.
I know, but it's
the
known.
Show well, it's known as Regis.
Wait a minute.
And
hold
Kelly.
On. Was it not always associated with Regis Philbin? I mean, that's where the show made its stride.
Well, I think Regis and Kathy Lee would probably
okay,
be the
but
I could see that.
Do we want to continue to debate this? I mean, I'm glad that we clarified.
I could see that.
Do we want to continue to debate this? I mean, I'm glad that. We clarified that the show is called Michael and Kelly because I wasn't sure.
I've never heard the show be called the show formerly known as
Well, listen, we've got some old school listeners. Len, back in the day when he was watching the show, we just want to remind him of the good days. That's all. I just wanted to clarify it.
It's like Prince.
I touched a nerve, apparently.
It's like Prince when he changed his name to the symbol and it was the artist
formerly known as Prince. See, there you go.
Anyway, I got Strahan's numbers up here. And he had 6 seasons of double-digit sacks. He had another season of 9 sacks and another season of 9.5 sacks with 141 total. And I think what a lot of people outside of New York don't realize, Lance, and I think Justin Tuck, you know, really learned his trade from Michael Strahan in this regard, he was much more than just a pass rusher. He was a dominant run defender. He was a two-way player and really did everything you asked of him on that defensive line.
Well, similar to a guy like Justin Tuck, who can't just get to the quarterback, but he can also really stop the run. And sometimes he doesn't get enough notice for stopping the run. And I would say Strahan, I don't think, even got enough notice for stopping the run. I think a lot of defensive ends in this league who pile up sacks, who played in the current game or played back in the day, are viewed as one-dimensional guys, meaning that they're players that they are paid to simply get to the quarterback, wreak havoc on the quarterback, and they're not looked upon as players that can also get into the holes, get into the gaps, and stop the run. So I think Strahan falls in the same category as the Tucks and other defensive ends, even with the Giants, who you get caught up in the sack numbers and you lose sight of what they also bring to the table.
And a couple other things to note, Warren Sapp had just 4 double-digit sack years, obviously tougher to do it from the inside than the outside. 9 sacks for him. Went to Oakland 4 years with the Raiders. Had in those 4 years just about 20 sacks. So his production definitely dipped once he left Tampa Bay. In fact, his last 7 years in the league, he just had 33 sacks. That's only about 4.5 per year. So he had a real dominant run from 1996 to 2000, but once he got past 2000, Sapp was not the quite dominant pass rusher that he was. Didn't have the longevity that Strahan did.
Well, but sacks come in bursts, right, as we know. For teams and individuals, you can't expect a guy to consistently put up the sack numbers each and every season. So it's understandable that even some of the greats, there's going to be periods where they're relatively quiet and they're not necessarily as dominant.
And look, I think Pro Bowls are a bad way to measure players. Warren Sapp had 7 Pro Bowls. Michael Strahan, also 7 Pro Bowls. Both guys were 4-time first-team All-Pros. So, obviously, both guys excellent players. I just was tired of hearing about Warren Sapp flapping his gums all week.
Sometimes guys just want attention. That's what it comes down to.
It's typical Warren Sapp, though.
He did so worked up over work, like the Richard Sherman situation.
He did absolutely no work. It was lazy analysis by Warren Sapp. You know, his statement, well, you know, Michael Strahan played against right tackles. A lot easier to get sacks on that side of the line. Well, yeah, the tackle might not be as good, but guess what? You're not rushing on the quarterback's blind side, so that makes it even tougher.
But see, if you look from a big picture perspective, okay, John Lynch is up.
Yeah.
Tony Dungy, Derek Brooks.
Right. And
Warren
Brooks
Sapp has a connection to all 3 of those guys. So you need to say to yourself, he's maybe trying to campaign for these 3. Do you understand? He's a part of the media. He knows how the media works. That's why when everybody gets caught up in the war of words, it's minutia. It really is.
Oh, no, it is minutia. I just dislike Warren Sapp.
Well, clearly you have issues with a number of human beings on the face of this earth.
Well, yeah, and one sitting right across
the
right
now. Well, that goes without saying. But I'm glad that we don't have to debate our relationship in and out throughout the course of the show. Well, I'm sure the listeners are dying to hear that. Warren Sapp and Michael Strahan, they're both deserving of getting into the Hall of Fame. They're both getting to the Hall of Fame. So, you know, I think the debate ends there. I think the heart and soul of that heated exchange was that, to me, Sapp was looking out for his own. He was looking out for guys that he played with or that coached him, and he wanted to try to give them an edge over Strahan, and that's why he was trying to convince the reporters, hey, you know, when you look at Strahan's numbers, they're really not that impressive. That's really all it came down to.
I do think it's inappropriate, however, for someone in the Hall of Fame to come out and say another player up for the Hall of Fame doesn't deserve to be in. I don't think that's the place of a current Hall of Famer to do that. In general, whether it's Strahan, Sapp, or anybody else, I don't think it's appropriate for someone that's made the Hall of Fame to be like, well, no, he doesn't deserve to be in. He doesn't deserve to be in. I don't think that's generally, to me, it's kind of like a brotherhood. That's not something you should do.
Well, I guess it's a positive that he doesn't have a vote. And that's what Strahan came out and said. Listen, Sapp could say all he wants. At the end of the day, you know, it's really not that influential because he can't go to the ballot box and voice his opinion.
And on the negative side, I will bring this up. On Saturday, I had to go to the, with Mr. Mike Becton, our excellent camera guy. We went to the NFL Awards dinner, not as guests, but to cover it. So, you know, we're in the red carpet. We have to get there around 2 o'clock. The red carpet started at 3. You know, we interview all the players on the red carpet and all that stuff. You know, Sean O'Hara was there. Victor Cruz was there. We talked to Thomas Davis. Got a couple cuts from him on Terrell Thomas coming back from the ACLs. He did not win comeback player of the year,
Panthers
by the way.
Linebacker you're referring to.
Exactly. And, you know, we're all excited. We go inside. We wait another couple hours for the ceremony to start. We wait an hour into the ceremony to get the Hall of Fame announcements. We're all ready to get Michael Strahan sound and talk to him and get video of Michael Strahan. And then he chooses not to come down with the rest of the Hall of Famers because of a prior engagement.
Maybe he found out you were there.
Because he had time to go on the stage and wave to everybody and, you know, be a star on TV. But then he couldn't take the extra 15 minutes that it would have taken to come downstairs and actually talk to the people that, by the way, were responsible for voting him into the Hall of Fame to begin with. So, Michael, I just want to thank you for wasting my entire Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much.
So, see, this is why you shouldn't get all worked up over what Warren Sapp had to say. You have reason to be irritated with Strahan to a certain degree. There you go. That's why, to me, it's amazing that you got all energetic and worked up this morning. Listen, the audience loves when you're chippy. I mean, they've got the chippy meter out each and every morning when they listen to Big Blue Kickoff Live. You know, the people who contribute on Twitter, you know, they love it when you're animated. But you seem to be holding a grudge against Mr. Strahan.
No, there's no grudge. I'm just pointing it out. That
you're a valuable time.
It would have been nice, you know, to walk down the stairs and take 10 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
It's always nice when players are cooperative because the media has a job, and a lot of them don't necessarily see that. And but Strahan's in the media, so he should see that.
Well, and that to me is why I thought it was kind of funny, where, you know, he's in the position where he has to interview people and other people have to help him out. You figure, you know, that you would change your ways a little bit, but it was a continuation of some of the same stuff you saw when he was here as a player. So,
see, if it was Richard Sherman, he would have at least given you an opportunity
talk
with him.
Richard Sherman,
so you got to look at it from that side of things.
This is no opportunity.
There you go.
To talk
see, you would not be holding a grudge with Richard Sherman because he would have made this sacrifice to talk to John Schmelk.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Aaron in Rochester. Aaron, what's going on, man?
Hey, hanging in there. I just wanted to touch on Michael Strahan.
Sure.
And, you know, I have to give him straight 100% kudos because he just followed the Giants mold, came in, did what he had to do, followed the old guys, and followed they little path. And far as Warren Sapp, I mean, look where he come from, Tampa Bay. They ain't a Class A organization like we are. So he going to do what he got to do to get his guys in, but he can't question Michael Strahan numbers or anything because Strahan does what he had to do. And he got in. You know, that's it, the bottom line. He got in. He didn't argue when he didn't get in the first time, which he should have got in. But that's a whole nother story. I know it's another topic. But I just wanted to say congratulations to him. And hopefully we could get Justin Tuck back in this so he can be the next Giant to go in. And I just, that's basically what I called for, just to congratulate Michael. And do y'all think we're going to get Justin Tuck back?
Well, I think they're going to make every which effort to bring him back as long as both sides can meet from a financial standpoint that works from a salary cap perspective.
And he kind of waffled back and forth last week a couple of times. He talked to the media. I still think the bottom line is this, Lance. He's never hit free agency before. He wants to see what's out there. Best case scenario, he's back here at the number he wants. But if he gets blown away by another offer by another team that the Giants are unable to match, and I don't think if he gets a – you know, 4-year, $25 million offer just to throw out a number out of the blue. No, I don't think the Giants would match that. But I don't know if he's going to get that offer either. So it's just a matter of what the market is for him. It's the beauty of capitalism. A guy's going to make what the market dictates. And we don't know what the market yet dictates for Justin Tuck. We'll have a much better feeling in about a month and a half when they get that exclusive rights period to negotiate with these free agents.
It's going to come down to money. It's as simple as that. I mean, you can't really word it or break it down any better than that. I think, though, Tuck, when you compare him to John Beeson's situation, and we've been asked a lot about this, is a little bit different because Tuck, I think, is of the mindset where he's willing to finish up his career with one team. He's comfortable here. He's a leader role. He's in a leadership role here, and I think that maybe he's willing to sacrifice the money, whereas a guy like Beeson, who, you know, has an opportunity to cash in after turning his career around because of all the injuries he's dealt with, looks at it a little bit differently. That's pure speculation, but that's at least how I would interpret it.
Sacrifice some money, I think Tuck would be willing to do. Like if the Giants offer him 3 for 10, he'd another offer 3 for 12 from somewhere else, I think he'd come here for 3 for 10. But if he's getting 3 for 20 somewhere and the Giants offer 3 for 10, guess what?
That's a significant difference.
Adios.
Yes.
See you later.
That's a fair point. I mean, if we're talking about a few million, meaning, you know, the 2, 3, 4 barometer, but when you start going 5, 6, 7, 8 and the numbers increase, then you start to say, okay, you know, maybe I need to explore other options and head elsewhere.
201-939-4513. Anthony's down in Maryland. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Doing great, Anthony. How about you?
I'm all right. Can't complain. Just want to congratulate Michael Strahan on making the Hall of Fame. One of the best sack machines to ever play the game. Congratulations to him. I just wanted to see. I read online yesterday that Giants might inquire about Larry Fitzgerald. What do you think about that?
I don't know why Arizona would part ways with him, to be honest with you, Anthony. I think that they're building something special out there. They won 10 games this season. If they get a lucky bounce here or there, they're probably in the playoffs. Bruce Arians has changed the culture. Fitzgerald finally has a quarterback. I'm not saying Carson Palmer's the long-term answer, but if you look at what he had to deal with the season before, where he dealt with 4 different quarterbacks, he'll take Palmer in a heartbeat. They've got a good defense.
Bad offensive line, too, they played behind.
So, you know, they came a long way. And then you have to look at it from this perspective, Anthony. What can the Giants offer Arizona that would intrigue them to part ways with him?
That's true. That is true.
You can make the argument, Anthony, that Arizona's closer to a playoff berth than the Giants are. Why would they trade one of their best established players on offense?
I just read it online yesterday that they might inquire about him. I just want to see the Giants upgrade their wide receiver core. I think they could use a big wide receiver. I think the receivers we have now are too small. What wide receiver do you think we might target in the offseason?
Well, I mean, I think it's possible you look at a wide receiver at some point in the draft. I think Ruben Randall will come back and provide some size at wide receiver. You have, for example, James Jones, a guy that was in Green Bay and is familiar with Ben McAdoo. He's a guy you could look at.
Right.
Kenny Britt would be a high-risk guy you can maybe take a look at. He's a free agent. He's
Eric
got some
Decker
size on him.
Of the Denver Broncos. Has size, didn't play very well in the Super Bowl, but he's going to be an attractive name because of what he did this season.
He'll probably be a little too expensive. He's probably going to get a big money contract somewhere else. What are the names on that wide receiver list?
Well, a guy that to me jumps off the page only because you can utilize him on special teams, Anthony, would be a guy like Jacoby Jones. It's intriguing, and I think it's something worth at least looking into.
And a guy along that same vein, not a bigger receiver, but a guy you can use on specials as well, is Dexter McCluster.
Correct. Those two are on the market, and I would think if you're the Giants and you're looking to make an investment and you're looking to upgrade multiple positions to get a two-way player, and what I mean by that, a guy that's going to contribute in two facets for your team would probably be wiser than maybe just going for the big splash with a guy that's only going to play so many snaps at wide receiver.
Anquan Boldin, a free agent as well. He's a guy with at least some size, even though not a lot of speed.
But don't you want to build some stability? I mean, how many more years does Boldin have in the tank? As impressive as he's been,
yeah.
I would think you'd want to bring in a younger guy that can play a few more years.
And then, of course, Mario Manningham, a free agent, Anthony, and so is Jeremy Maclin coming off that ACL. So those are all different guys the Giants could take a look at. If really want some size too. Plaxico Burress was running around media Radio Row all week last week, a guy who wouldn't talk to the media if his life depended on it when he was with the Giants. All of a sudden, he's in need of a job. He's selling socks online, of all things. And he's like, who wants to talk to Plaxico? I'm Mr. Happy now.
Now,
idiot.
Anthony, unfortunately, as much as John gets worked up over Plaxico Burress, Ramsey's Barden is on the Bills right now. So he is no longer on the market in case you were looking to go back to that direction.
No, I was not looking to go
okay,
back to that.
Okay, just wanted to double check. That's why.
And I am not looking to go back to Plaxico Burress. We were going to repeat that year until that dummy shot himself in the leg.
Yep.
So I'm still upset about that. So, you know what I mean? So, there. I don't know. Plaxico Burress is out of the question. One more question, guys, and I'm out of here. The linebacker position. Do you think the Giants will bring back John Beeson?
I think they're going to try to do it. The only way to me they don't bring back John Beeson is if somebody comes out and throws him a top 5 linebacker type of contract. If I had to guess, I don't think that'll happen because of Ozall's injury history and things of that nature.
Right.
But
right.
If that happens, you never know. But I, in my opinion, the Giants have every intention of bringing back John Beeson. And all things being equal, I think John Beeson would like to be back. I think he likes it here. He likes the team. He likes the organization. And I think he was a big part of the defense.
And I read online yesterday about some sports scandal going on with Eli and the Giants about fake memorabilia. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the only thing I can do is relay the statement that the Giants made in regards to that lawsuit. It's pending litigation. As an employee of the Giants, I can't comment on that. Lance can't comment on it. So all
right.
We can say is that the Giants say the lawsuit is without merit. No one is guilty of any wrongdoing, and they will fight it in the legal process, and that's pretty much all we can say about that.
No problem, fellas. Thank you. Y'all both have a blessed day.
All right, you too, Anthony.
Appreciate it.
One other player I want to throw out there that fits into the mold of a Dexter McCluster and a Jacoby Jones, Ted Ginn is also going to be a free agent who had a very nice season with the Carolina Panthers.
I'd be more than willing to take a look at Ted Ginn. I think that's a great fit. I want a dynamic punt and kick returner here this year. Look, Ted Ginn can catch. It's not like he's dropping punts.
Absolutely.
And kicks.
He had a breakout campaign, I would say. So I would like a guy that can contribute on special teams and also play X amount of snaps as a wideout.
By the way, Julian Edelman is going to be a free agent again this year, too. He was a guy that came here, visited with the Giants last season, and there were rumors that he was close to signing with Big Blue. So I'm not sure he's necessarily a fit. Because to me, he's kind of that same slot type
Correct.
Of guy you have with Cruz and Terrell Jernigan. So I don't really see a fit there, but I know he was a guy that came in here and visited last year.
Well, number one, he can help out special teams. So I could see where you're going with that, John. Number two, though, if you bring him in and you want to put him out there at the same time as Victor Cruz, somebody's got to go to the outside. And I don't know if Victor Cruz is a guy they want to put out on the outside. One other thing I wanted to piggyback off of the point that Anthony was asking about the linebacker. I know I've brought this up a lot, but in case our audience has turned over a bit, when you think about John Beeson and maybe what he can get on the open market, I always like to look at what linebackers got last offseason who play the same position. And Danelle Ellerbe, the former Raven, who was coming off, obviously, a Super Bowl season.
What did he get from
Miami? He got 5 years, $35 million from the Dolphins, just to put things in perspective.
I mean, you could make the argument that Beeson, when healthy, is a better player than Ellerbe.
LB doesn't have the same injury history as a guy like Beeson. So, you know, that is something that may downgrade Beeson's offers.
I would say they're probably in the same type of neighborhood, though, as players. I mean, LB's younger, I think, too, right?
Of course. And that, I think, helps him out.
How old is Beeson? Was he 29?
Let's take a look off the top. It seems like Beeson's old, but I don't really think he's that old just because of all the injuries. I think that gets sometimes misinterpreted.
He's 29, born January 14th, 1985. So he just turned 29 a couple weeks ago.
So he still has a few years in him. Absolutely. I mean, as long as he stays healthy, that's going to be the key. And that's going to determine how many offers he's going to get. Our team's going to want to take a chance on a player that has not been able to last 16 games each and every year he's been in the league. That's going to be the big question.
Yeah, this year is really his healthiest year in four seasons with all the knee and Achilles problems he had. So,
which for a guy that's hitting the market, it's important to have that season right before you test free agency where you show that you're healthy. And the Giants know from their perspective, because they've got an up-close and personal look, will other teams from afar be as aggressive in trying to bring him in the mix?
One other name I think is interesting on this wide receiver free agent list, and I think he fits the type of guy the Giants would look at, Riley Cooper. He's got good hands, possession receiver. He's got some size. I know you had all that stuff in the offseason last year, but that seems to have blown over a little bit. I don't think that would be an issue if he came here and played football for the Giants this season. It just seems like, I know he had a big year this year with Nick Foles, and the Eagles will probably try to bring him back, but I think he's a good type of possession receiver that you can trust to be where he's supposed to be at the right time. That could be the type of player the Giants might look at, too, to slide in.
I think the Eagles are going to do everything they can to keep him, given the fact that Jeremy Maclin, remember, missed all of last season with the torn ACL, so they may have some questions and concerns regarding him, and they want some stability by bringing back Riley Cooper. But I think that he would be a good fit in this system. He's also a guy that has proven he could stretch the field. I mean, he ran a lot of deep routes, and he was one of Nick Foles' favorite targets down the field in addition to DeSean Jackson. It wasn't as if they just ran Jackson deep.
And one of your favorite wide receivers in the NFL, Sehi Ajiri-Tutu.
Absolutely.
He's also a free
big
agent.
Fan. Had one of the biggest touchdowns this season at the expense of the Kansas City Chiefs for the San Diego Chargers. One of the highlights that John had to try to read during an update on the Giants radio
not,
network.
Not try.
Somebody he consulted with, though, before he went on the air.
Well, that's because I'm producing the game. I just
there
want you to double-check the pronunciation for me since you're just relaxing in the back of the booth not doing
anything. Yes, I know. Some of us just sit back and get comfortable and enjoy the show.
You get your feet up talking to Lisa, Jeff Eagles, and you're just hanging out.
That's right.
201-939-4513. Tim is in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim.
Hi. I want to talk about free agency.
Will the
Giants be signing Justin Tuck and John Beeson in order to next year to become contenders for the Super Bowl in Arizona?
I'll tell you what, Tim. I wouldn't mind going back to Arizona. The weather would be a lot better there than what is up here in February. Though, in fairness, though, Lance, boy, how much did the New Jersey-New York Search Committee, Super Bowl Committee, catch a break? Where you basically had the two best weather days of the winter. Literally, the two best weather days of the winter, the Saturday and Sunday of the Super Bowl.
Very, very lucky. Mother Nature cooperated, which is truly amazing in an unpredictable month known as February. I mean, look at how brutal this week is going to be, supposedly.
Awful.
We're supposed to get more snow tonight into Wednesday.
And then Sunday again, they're saying.
So if this week was last week, there would have been a lot more headaches that they would have had to deal with. And of all days for it to snow the day immediately after the Super Bowl, I mean, you couldn't have planned it out any better.
Well, I was talking to Dan and DeAndre, one of our PR guys here, before the show. Could you imagine if the snow came on Sunday night while everybody was waiting for those New Jersey Transit trains?
Oh, it would have been a mess. Well, the other thing is, would the league have considered to postpone the game? Remember, that was part of the discussion, too.
I think it depends when the snow would have started and how bad the snow would have been. If it was like the full 8 inches we got yesterday and it was supposed to start falling at like noon on Sunday, I think you would have had to consider something.
Well, the snow yesterday started at what, about 6 in the morning,
yeah,
very early
take.
In the morning, and went till about,
five.
I want to say heavily till 5. So
yeah.
That would have been right before kickoff. They would have had time to, clear up the field and so forth. But the headache of transportation, that would have been the killer.
That would have been the trick. 201-939-4513. We should really answer Tim's question. He talked about the defensive guys. I think 75% chance that Tuck and Beeson are both here next year. I think that's fair, right? 75%? Both guys come back?
That would be a good number.
And one of the two, I'd say there's only a 5 to 10% chance neither one of those two players are back.
There's a very good chance at least half is going to return.
Correct.
The question is which half. Right now, I would say I would lean towards Tuck just because of the fact that he's been with the organization for so long, and when it comes down to money, I think it'd be a guy that would be willing to accept maybe something below market value. That doesn't mean that I don't think Beeson had a bad time here. It's just that if you had to make a choice right now, looking at it from a big picture perspective, I'd give Tuck a significant slight edge over Beeson.
And again, folks, just to make the point that Lance is making, the Giants have a lot of needs. A wide receiver, a tight end, a running back, offensive line, a linebacker, or two, perhaps even a defensive end, the cornerback. They have a lot of needs to fill in free agency. And even though they're going to have $25, $30 million of cap space, it disappears very fast in this NFL landscape. So the Giants are going to have to dole out those resources very prudently in this offseason. It's going to be tough. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's up, pal?
Hey, what's happening, fellas? Listen, I wanted to congratulate Michael Strahan for getting the Hall of Fame. I'm so proud of him. And I don't know if you guys checked out my Twitter over the weekend, but, I got a little bit out of hand on Warren Sapp's Twitter page. Oh, I let him have it real good.
Oh, did you really?
Really? Wow.
Oh, did I? Go back and check my Twitter.
I will check that out right now.
Oh, yeah. I pulled no punches whatsoever, and I hope my kids don't see it because I'll let them have it. And, not only was Michael Strahan one of the best pass rushers that ever played the game, but believe me when I tell you, he played the run as good as anyone, and that's the difference between him and all the other pass rushers. Michael Strahan, was a top run stopper. They actually ran the ball towards Mr. Sapp, so, I mean, no comparison. He should have got in last year. I'm very happy that he finally made it.
It's nice to see that, Steve. You're adding some new criteria to players that need to make the Hall of Fame. I'm reading your tweet to Warren Sapp. New criteria, I take it. Very well worded. In entertaining term.
Yeah.
We'll try to keep it PG-13 on this program. You understand. So that's why I'm not reading your tweet. But
yeah,
we give you creativity points, certainly.
I defended him harder than I ever defended Hakeem.
You know, and I was just going to compliment you for getting through one phone call without mentioning Hakeem Nicks. And Steve, you know, you took that right out of my mouth. I can't compliment you anymore. Yeah, the drought I thought was going to continue, but it lasted about 3 seconds.
You know, I couldn't help it. Listen. Real quick, I'm going to throw out a few names and I'll listen off air, guys. As far as bringing in some draft picks, I wanted to know what you think about Kyle Fuller, the corner from Virginia Tech. And Telvin Smith, I think he's an outside linebacker from FSU. And then and Travis Swanson, the center from Arkansas. Do you guys know anything about them? And do you think they could be some possible good fits?
If they're going to bring in a corner via the draft, I think it's very important for the Giants to bring in a guy with size. Because if you look at their secondary right now, Steve, they don't have a great deal of size. Now, Fuller out of Virginia Tech is 6 feet tall, and they've gone to Virginia Tech to get some talent recently, if you look at David Wilson and Jayron Hosley. So, you know, I'm not saying that 6 feet tall is small, but, you know, I think that you need to look at the Seahawks model. And what the Seahawks showed is that we may be entering a new era in the NFL where you need that big physical corner, because a lot of teams have big physical receivers. And the reason why Seattle matched up so well with Denver is, you know, they had guys that could deal with a Demaryius Thomas and an Eric Decker. Just pure size. Forget all the other factors. So, you know, Decker and Thomas couldn't just win the jump ball anymore because they had to deal with Sherman and Maxwell. And Maxwell is 6'1", and Sherman is around that, if not taller. So, you know, if you're going to draft a corner, I think it's important for the Giants to bring in a guy that is between, I want to say, 6'1 and 6'3. And I would eliminate everybody else off the table as a result. Because you need to look at, think about it, Steve. You got to go up against Dez Bryant. You got to go up against Pierre Garçon, who's not the biggest receiver, but he's physical.
He's big enough.
And then look at what Philadelphia has to offer. So, you know, using a quote from Len's book, you know, Len always says that the Giants need to think about the division. They can't think about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, I'm piggybacking off of his point. Then draft guys that are built to go up against the physical wide receivers that you're going to see.
Good point. Hey, and great show as usual. And before I leave, Larry Fitzgerald, great player, but I don't want him. I like to get somebody a little bit younger and a little bit more size, too. So, hey, thanks a lot for taking my call, guys. I'll be listening off
thanks,
there,
Steve.
And I'll keep it PG on Twitter. Thanks.
All right, Steve, we appreciate that, especially for the women and children listening at home.
Hashtag Giants Chat is a family hashtag.
Absolutely.
Besides those pictures Lance put up there last week.
Sometimes we try to bend the rules.
But
I get out of line.
Telvin Smith, outside linebacker out of Florida State, 6'3", 218 at linebacker. Very small linebacker. A lot of people think he might have to transition to strong safety.
Well, the Giants have plenty of safeties, so I don't think they need another one.
And obviously he'd have to be a weak side outside linebacker. But, boy, 6'3", 218 in linebacker. That's too small than Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson, 6'4", 240.
And think about tight ends that you'd have to go up against, too. Don't forget.
You can't have a 218-pound linebacker. I don't know how that's going to work.
That'd be tough. Yeah, that's why I'm saying that, you know, and I think a lot of Giants fans would agree, the strategy for how they go about not just evaluating players, but who they determine to select needs to change. And you need to really look at it from every which angle, specifically just the physical characteristics of a guy, whether it be linebacker, corner. You've got to look at, okay, these are our opponents. What do we need from a personnel standpoint to match up with our opponents? I think that's an important element of what goes into who you draft.
Did you see Jason Forbes' tweet?
Well, apparently it's going to be comical because I can see your facial expression. So let's take a look here at the comedy hour that's going on between you and my favorite guy, Jason Forbes, who represents
he always comes after you, by the
our
way.
Fans north of the border.
Go,
well, he stirs the pot.
Yeah, I know.
I call
it.
Him a troublemaker.
He's
hashtag
a troublemaker.
Troublemaker, by the way. We're using that in conjunction with hashtag Giants Chat.
Read it.
The
what
real concerning question of topic for Giants Chat should be, were the guardrails too high for Lance Meadow on Media Day?
Yes.
Listen, the guardrails are always high for me no matter what type of event it is.
Now, I guess you would have a real issue of a guy standing at the podium and you try to ask a question because the podium would probably block you after you, when you put your hands up.
The
right?
podium has been known to be imposing during the course of my career. So I really don't enjoy that setting. The proper setting is both talent and player on a chair so that at least the line of vision is somewhat equal.
Oh, I thought it was him like you like an Indian style, like sitting at the
Well,
at the
I don't think we
guy,
need to
no?
hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Yeah. I wouldn't take it to that degree. But the rails, to answer Jason's very thoughtful, thought-provocative question, I mean, he really knows how to elevate the conversation here on Giants Chat. We'll leave it at that.
201-939-4513. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's
Speaking
happening?
Speaking of people who elevate the conversation.
Yes.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, fella?
How we doing, Shakes? Shakes, you got to bring some more energy. We're
yeah,
a little concerned about
on,
you
man?
Here. I mean, I know it's the offseason, and I know the Seahawks won the title, but my goodness, I mean, what do we got to do to dig deep here?
I don't know, man. Listen to me and bring the players in that I need, man.
Well, who do you want, Shakes?
I want them in blue, man. All right. First of all, I wanted to jump in on something. You was talking about, y'all was naming a couple of wide receivers. Y'all was naming a lot of wide receivers and in regard to possibly replacing Nick. And, you know, I don't want that to happen. We have to bring back Nick.
No, you don't.
Now, I yes, we do. Yes,
no,
we do.
You don't have to do anything, else. Shakes. You don't have to do anything.
I don't want nobody else to replace him. There's nobody else that's going to replace him. That's a free agent. The only guy that I'll be satisfied, if they, at the end of the offseason, they let Nick go, I mean, the only name that I will be satisfied if they tell me that Larry Fitzgerald is a Giant. If that's not the case, I'm going to be very upset. Very upset. It's nobody else that can do the things he do when he's healthy.
Shakes, I hate to tell you, there are a lot of wide receivers that in two full seasons can catch 109 passes.
It's not
that's
even
a lot.
About that. It's the
two seasons.
It's the physicality of Nick. Not a lot of wide receivers got that.
I'll tell you what.
You can probably name who's more physical than Nick.
Hakeem Nicks didn't look very physical the last 2 years. How many times did he fight for balls and win that battle the last two seasons when he had three touchdown catches in 2 years?
Well, Shakes, notice that when you made that
pay the man. Maybe his attitude will be different. Pay the man.
No, Shakes. Here's the thing, Shakes. If you got a guy not playing hard, and I don't think this was the case, because he's not getting paid what he wants to get paid, I don't want that guy on my football team. Because you know what's going to happen when he gets paid? He's not going to give a damn anymore because he got his contract.
Yeah, I understand that. I just think that he's been hurt. You know what I mean? He's just been hurt. And this year,
so why should you invest in a guy that's got a big question mark connected
to
him?
He's never been healthy.
Yeah, you're right about that. He has never been healthy. But what other wide receiver really do what he can do when he's healthy? Like, really?
Well, but it depends on the
new other physical wide receivers out there besides, what, Demaryius Thomas, Anquan Boldin.
But Boldin is a free agent. Shakes, but keep this in mind. We don't know what this new offensive system is going to look like. You're basing it on how they utilized Akeem Nicks in the old regime. Who's to say that they can't bring in another wide receiver and have them flourish here?
And look at our wide receivers now. And throw Nicks off the list. The only big guy is Randle. It's the only big guy. We're going to be small as heck.
Well,
and we're talking about big corners ruling the league now? We can just be grabbing up on our little corners like, we got you. Y'all don't have Nicks no more.
Well, that's why they would go out and they would look for a replacement in free agency or the draft is always
an
option.
Nobody else that can
well,
do
listen,
it.
But Shakes, if you're looking for a guy with height on the market, there's guys with height on the market. There's
but
a distinct difference
physical.
Between height and physicality.
They're not physical. I want somebody as big that's going to bounce off tacklers. I want that. And I want somebody that's going to grab the ball up in the air. I don't see that from Decker. Decker is just too soft for me. And then everybody else that y'all named, Macklin and all them other people, they soft. All of them are soft. The only one that I heard that y'all named was Larry Fitzgerald. And y'all said, that's a long shot. That's not even going to happen. So we got to bring Nicks back.
But Shakes, here's my point. If you're telling me I'm getting the Hakeem Nicks from 3 and 4 years ago, I'm down with that. But the Hakeem Nicks from the last two seasons was not a difference-making wide receiver. Emmanuel Sanders is better than what Hakeem Nicks has been the last two seasons. He's a better football player.
Come on, he's soft too, man.
But he's better. He catches more passes. He catches more touchdowns.
He's soft, though, man.
I'll take a soft guy in your terminology that catches more passes and touchdowns than a tough guy that can't run.
Well, Shakes, I'll take a soft guy that can play 16 games. How about that? I mean, wouldn't you want that?
Great point, too.
The bottom line is if you're going to invest in a guy, you want to make sure he's out there.
I was on like a little Twitter battle, a little Twitter beef, because somebody was really down in my idea of bringing in McCluster, and it's not to replace Nick. I don't want him to replace Nick. I want him to do the job that we wanted from Murphy, with the boy that Manningham left. Well, that's what I want McCluster to come in and do.
Now, Shakes, ideally, if you can get him to hold on to the football, Drill Jernigan should be able to be that guy for you next year if he can actually catch the damn ball on punts and kicks.
Yeah, he should. But I want somebody that's proven that can do it. And McCluster is just, I love the kid agility and everything, like the bounce back. Like the kid can move, man. I've been watching him since college. And I was sitting there when he was in the draft, and I was like, man, maybe he could fall to us. And he was in the third round. I'm like, ooh, maybe he could fall. And then Kansas City picked him up. I was like, But I'm, man, McCluster, man, he needs to be a giant. He needs to be a giant. You know, I want more players. And also, I want to say this. If we don't bring back Beeson, then who are we going to bring in? Because, I mean, I don't see nobody else that's like that. Like, and even in the draft, like, I like a couple of linebackers like C.J. Mosley. He's good. But maybe he won't even be around.
Riley Cooper's a pretty physical wide receiver, Shakes.
Riley Cooper, man?
Uh-oh.
Come on, man.
You touched a soft spot there.
Come on, man. Riley Cooper.
He had a good year this year.
He did have a good year. Come on, man.
He had to hesitate for a second.
Man.
What happened? I thought you were going to go hard at John. I'm disappointed, Shakes. Come on. Don't let him win this.
No. I got to give him respect that he is due. You know what I mean? I can't just poop on what he did this season. He did have a good season. I'm not going to poop on it. But come on, man, to replace Knicks. Come on, man. Like, let me take the words from ESPN, man. Come on, man. Come on, man. Riley Cooper?
Well, to answer your question about the linebacker spot, you're right. There aren't many attractive linebackers out there that in the event they did lose Beeson that they'd be able to bring in an impactful guy off the free agent market. To answer your question, I don't see a lot of attractive names that are jumping off this page.
It's not. So we got to throw the money at them. I mean, not throw so much that we handicapping us in the cap, but we need to throw some legitimate money at him. We can't do the regular old giant way and say, this is what we're offering. You don't want to do it? Okay, go ahead and try to see what you get out of there, and we'll just be out of luck over here. Like, come on, man. We got to take care of what we got to take care of, and that linebacker's position is important. Obviously, I've been saying it for two off-seasons now.
I hear Aaron Curry wants to make a comeback, Shakes.
Oh, come on, man. Come on. He needs to stay home and be with his kids, man.
Thank you, Shakes.
All right, man. Y'all take care.
All right, Shakes.
See, we got him going
a little
bit.
We got
there.
Him. As the conversation progressed, he opened up a little. But
he was
tell
not
you,
a big fan of the Riley Cooper idea.
No, not at all. Shakes and
it's
Steve
not
in
a
D.C.,
bad idea.
You know, they must be getting together every morning at the coffee shop and talking about Hakeem Nicks.
Yeah, they should really.
Clearly.
I was going to say the same thing. They should start like a Mid-Atlantic States Hakeem Nicks fan club.
Well, geographically, it can work. I'm telling you. The two of them, they're cooking something up.
So I guess if Hakeem doesn't re-sign with the Giants, we need to make sure he gets to either ball to the Ravens or to the Redskins. At least
just so that they could go see him in person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They can come. They can, you know.
I do not want to think about that day. Oh, my God. Shakes may not call in for 3 weeks after that.
Yeah,
same thing with Steve from D.C. There may be a mourning period. Scary thought. Very scary thought.
201-939-4513. Joe's in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning. What's going on, pal?
Good morning. I'm just giving my analysis of the Super Bowl and what it's going to take to beat Seattle, an old formula we use.
Sure,
and,
break it down.
And Akeem Nicks would not beat Seattle. They just put their number one cornerback on him. What's his name? I forget.
Richard Sherman.
Right. And that will be the end of it. We need what we should. Seattle won that game by all three phases there, their offense, their defense, and specialty teams. And the key is their defense with that backfield of theirs. Their defensive backs, we get another shutdown corner, and we can use that same formula. Because then you could rush your linebackers as much as you want. You could blitz, whatever. You have to shut down corners. If you don't, then you can't. Because we have the safeties. We have Prince, just another shutdown corner. And it's going to make our defense that much tougher. You stay in the game. Then the next formula is getting somebody to block up front for our running backs. Keep us in the game running the ball, because you ain't going to beat Seattle passing. You have to run the ball. So we get some a tackle, a guard, or something like that, and I'd rather have blocking tight ends than Akeem Nicks, because that'll keep us in the game and just don't turn it over. And really, that's it. That's what Parcells, how he ran defense, but he had the strong guys up front rushing there with Taylor, and that's where they had the pressure. And then they ran the ball, didn't turn it over. And that's what it's going to take to get back in there. And we're not far away from that. So that's what I see. Another analysis was the fans. Did they import all Seattle's fans or whatever? Was it mostly Seattle fans?
Well, you know what, Joe? It's funny. I talked to a couple of people that were at the game, and they said it was really 50-50 Seattle-Denver. The Seattle fans were just much, much louder.
Well, I'd like to take a whatever, you know, how they test the thing. I guess our fans are, you know what I mean, a little older and at, you know what I mean, at the game and stuff like that, because that's what I thought. 50-50 and still the stadium sound as loud as ever. And it was Seattle fans doing it. So it can just show that our stadium can get up there too, you know. That's about it, but really, I'd get a shutdown corner, get somebody to block up front, don't turn it over, and we're in all the games. Do you agree?
Well, those are a lot of things you threw out there, Joe. I mean, I know you said the team's not that far away, but those are some significant things that you did mention.
Well, you just get the shutdown corner and don't turn the ball over. You're in the game, because it's going to be. Our defense was really good last year.
Hey, look, cutting down the turnovers is the number one thing. If there's one lesson you take from the Super Bowl, if you turn the ball over against good teams, you're not going to win.
Right, and you can't. And do you agree? You ain't going to beat Seattle by just passing the ball. You got to be able to run the ball to keep them honest. And that's because they have a great defensive backfield with their safeties. They're all big, and the corners.
Well, you also need a good offensive line to do that, so let's not overlook that. And that's a big issue for the Giants right now.
Yes, but as long as we don't turn the ball over, our defense could keep us in the game.
Not, though, if the offense goes three and out all the time, Joe.
No, well,
I mean, come on.
If you're turning the ball over, then you don't even give yourself a chance.
True.
You know, you look at the Ravens' defense, and some of them that won it, back when they beat the Giants, it was basically defense. Don't turn the ball over, whatever the quarterback could do, and you keep yourself in the game. You know, hey, you get a break, a turnover, or something like that, you can win low-scoring games. But you got to start with the defense, and that's, I think, we're not far away. If we get a shutdown corner with Prince, we'd be right in the game. And then go with the linemen, and I think the tight end might be better than you were arguing with Shakes. A tight end, I prefer a tight end maybe over Nicks there.
All right, appreciate the call, Joe.
That's just my analysis, so, okay?
Thank you. Joe. Hey, look, and I think getting a good two-way tight end might be more important than getting another big-time wide receiver as well. At least you have Randall here, where you think, you know, if he takes another step, he could be a good enough wide receiver, potentially, if he gets better, to, you know, take some of the, you know, pressure off of Cruz at that second wide receiver spot. But there's no one here to me that you can put out there a tight end and have any sort of confidence he has a chance to do anything.
Well, they need to upgrade in that spot, and I think on paper at least, between Jernigan, Cruz, and Randall, there's options, but you still need to protect yourself. Why? Because a few of those guys that I just named are still unproven commodities. Randall's been up and down. Jernigan's had, what, two or three games under his belt where he's played good football. You got to protect yourself. You can't go into this season, John, thinking that all of those guys are going to be able to pick up where they left off.
And a couple guys on Twitter have made this point, and Vic Fontana is the most recent. It's scary to think how far the Giants have to come to be at Seattle's level. We have a lot of work to do that'll take 2 or 3 years. And, you know, quite frankly, it's hard to argue that. I mean, Seattle's just much more talented.
Well, that's why I would agree with Vic's point more so than what Joe is saying. I respect Joe's optimism, but I don't think it's like you just flip your fingers and smack your hands together and all of a sudden the Giants are going to be right up there with Seattle. I think that there's a lot of heavy lifting that has to be done. It's not just so simple to say you bring in a shutdown corner, you cut down the turnovers. You know, the issues went even further than that.
Well, we talked about all the different needs they have in terms of personnel. On offense, you might have 5 or 6 new offensive starters next year. On defense, you have 3 or 4 key players that are free agents you're going to have to bring back. So it's a lot of decisions that are going to have to be made. No question about it.
Well, because the key to your offense is not necessarily just protecting the football, but having long, sustainable drives. I mean, how many times did the Giants put together long, sustainable drives this past
season?
Well,
and why did you turn it over? You turned it over because your offensive line couldn't project your quarterback. Your quarterback was inaccurate at times and made bad decisions.
No running game.
Your wide receivers didn't fight for the football. They ran wrong routes. And your running game was inconsistent. So you put all those together. Those are a lot of things you have to fix.
And that's why they need to address each and every one of them, whether it be through the draft or free agency, before they start thinking big picture type of things.
201-939-4513. Mike's in Dumont. Mike, what's up, pal?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How's everyone doing today?
Doing well, Mike.
Doing well, Mike. How's everything with you?
Very good. Thanks for asking. Real quick, as far as Knicks goes, and I'll just touch on that briefly, he can take his apathetic attitude, his mysterious injuries, and his lack of production somewhere else next year. I'm done with him the last two seasons. I've seen enough. You know, maybe he'll go on somewhere else and do well, but as we've seen with people who've recently left the Giants, especially on the offensive side, they go somewhere else and you never hear their name again. So, adios, Knicks. My point is, and I wanted to see what your guys' thoughts were on this, as far as toughening up this offensive line. I don't even know if this is an option, and I don't know if you guys are going to like this, but, hey, I'd like to see Richie Incognito on the offensive line. From what I'm reading recently about what went on over there in Miami, it's starting to be a lot less on his shoulders and a little bit more on the other guys. I know he's not going to win any Walter Payton Man of the Year awards. I don't want that. I want a nasty beast road grader guard that's going to bring some nastiness back to this team, back to this offense, and play a little bit of a smash-mash football on the offensive line.
Hey, look, Mike, I'm with you. I think you need a Richie Incognito type, but can I get a Richie Incognito type without the baggage?
Yeah, good luck with that.
No, Mike, but you can find them. David Deal was a 5th-round draft pick. Rich Seibert was an undrafted free agent. Sean O'Hara was a 7th-round draft pick and a low-cost free agent. You can find those types of guys and not have to spend a lot of money to sign them. It's not impossible.
Well, I thought we might have gotten one last year with the kid from Ohio State, and then I never heard his name again.
Eric Herman out of Ohio, not Ohio State. And look,
Ohio,
he was just very raw. And when he had opportunities in the preseason, he quite frankly didn't play that well. So he'll have to prove it in training camp this year that he's ready to roll.
Right. Well, that's my point. I mean, we may be able to get someone like that in the draft, and he's raw, and we have to wait a couple of years. This guy is, you know, we know that he's going to go and smack someone in the mouth. And his attitude, you know, maybe the Maras and Coughlin can tone him down a little bit to where we have someone nasty to fill in for Deal retiring. He can play either guard or center spot. And, you know, maybe we can do some other things with the draft instead of, you know, offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. Maybe we can bulk up in other areas. Just a thought. I'd love to see finally somebody, you know, just that nastiness back. Bring it back. You know, with those fullbacks we have with Connor and Rhino, I mean, we could really smack some people around. And I'd like to see that back in Big Blue.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
And I remember last year, one of the big things Tom Coughlin said in the offseason where the team wanted to get better and improve Lance was he wanted them to be tougher and more physical, a more physical, tough football team. And I think that was a failure this year. I don't think we saw enough of that. I mean, defensively stopping the run, you could make the argument, big progress, and he became tougher in the front four and with Beeson at linebacker, I guess, on defense. But offensively, I mean, you didn't get the sense that they were pushing anybody around, bullying anybody, getting a lot of push up front. You just never got that idea that it was happening.
And that was a big identity of this team in years past. So, you know, I mean, I agree with Mike. I think that they certainly can use a guy with that killer instinct and that ability to set the tone in the trenches, whether it be on defense or offense. But, you know, to answer Mike's question or what he's calling for, I think there's other established veterans that are on the market who have had a taste of the league, may not have the baggage of a Richie Incognito, and can come in and resurrect your offensive line. You don't necessarily need to go the route of Richie Incognito just because he displayed that toughness, whether it be on or off the field. I would be stunned if Tom Coughlin would be open to bringing a guy like that into that locker room culture. I'd really be surprised.
That's also an ownership decision.
True.
And I'm not sure John Mara and the Tishes want that type of person representing this team, to be quite honest with you. And look, I agree with Mike, you know, with all the news that's come out, these other texts and text messages or whatever that have been released by Incognito's side, you know, I'm frankly not surprised by it. We talked about it when it went down, that that's just kind of how the locker room culture is. Obviously, some of the phrases and words that he used were inappropriate, but I'm not surprised by any of the stuff that's coming out now. But the NFL is still doing an investigation. I'm sure they'll release their findings at some point.
I think it's going to come out later this week, I believe.
Yeah, they want to get the good Super Bowl stuff out of the way first then before they start dredging up back this other nonsense. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Justin in Dobbs Ferry. Justin, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I don't know if the TV showed how loud it was that guy was saying earlier, but I was at the game. I was lucky enough to be at that game, and I was at the 2007 Super Bowl with the Giants. I mean, usually it's like a corporate kind of crowd, and it's not that kind of, it's not really noisy. Even if there was 50% Seahawks fans, that's 40,000 people, that place was the loudest it's ever been, you know, in MetLife Stadium.
Well, Justin, I was going to ask you, was that game louder than any Giant game you've been to?
The effect of it was, it was definitely loud. You know, at times Giant games are going to be loud because you have 70-plus thousand people cheering, but it's not throughout the whole game. Like, the first play, you're like, all right, they're loud because it's the first play, everybody's excited. But that crowd stayed loud, at least for the first three quarters, until they realized they weren't.
Interesting.
You know, that they were so far ahead. But it was like deafening loud that even people on the sidelines were just, like, looking at each other. You could just tell people were just like, wow, they didn't expect that. I mean, Giant fans, you know, any Giant fans or anybody that's, you know, bleeds blue should just take a note from that. Like, they, you know, that helps, you know, whether it's, you know, it didn't win the game for them, but it definitely helped the psyche of the defense there. They brought their 12th man. There's no reason why the Giants can't do that same thing every game. You know, every game, Giants fans be out there, 50, 60,000 plus people, you know, that are capable of cheering their defense on and, you know, stopping them on third down, stopping them, or, you know, make noise when they're, you know, behind, you know, under the 20-yard line. Because that definitely rattled Peyton in the offense.
I think it's a good point, and there's really no reason, Justin, why – you know, you can't get that type of noise, and I think it would help the team to win more football games here. It'll make it a better home field advantage. I think you make some good points.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, just amazing how, you know, like, when you saw the crowd, you're like, all right, it's 50-50, and you know, I don't think anybody, especially at a Super Bowl, you know, it's usually corporate and usually not that loud. That place was loud, and I'm looking forward to maybe a 2014 season and Giants maybe stepping it up in defense. And the help from the crowd will push this along.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate the call, bud.
Thank you, guys.
Take it easy. 201-939-4513. Pierre's in Dallas. Pierre, welcome back to the show. What's up, buddy?
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well, Pierre.
Good, man. I want to congratulate you guys on a good Super Bowl, man. Y'all got lucky. Y'all eked it out, boy.
The weather cooperated. Yep.
Yes, yes, it did. I want to congratulate Michael Strahan on making the Hall of Fame, a Texas boy from Houston. But I want to say, man, this Hall of Fame panel, their credibility is shot, because if their criteria for putting someone in the Super Bowls, Charles Haley got stiffed, because he's the only player in NFL history to have five Super Bowls with two different teams, and he was instrumental in both of those teams winning. Man, I don't even want to talk about the Hall of Fame. If they're going to treat a player like that, you know, yeah, he was a hole to the media. But there are a lot of players that way. And it shouldn't be in this real world is, yeah, they let personal their personal feelings get in and determine what players get in.
Well, no, I hear you, it's Pierre, but there's also something else with Charles Haley. You know, he had a lot of injury issues in his career. He had a very short career. He only, he played 13 years, but a good three or four of those were really injury-plagued years where he didn't play a whole lot. So he didn't have that long of a career. He barely had 100 career sacks, 105 total over the course of his career. And, look, I get what you're saying, and, yes, he was an impactful player. But that being said, he didn't have great longevity. He was only a first-team All-Pro player twice. Strand was an all-first-team All-Pro player five times. Sapp was a first-team All-Pro five times. And he only made five Pro Bowls when both those guys made eight. So see why they would go in ahead of Haley, and I understand Super Bowls matter. But let's be honest. He's not a quarterback. He's a defensive end.
I understand, but 13 years is a long time for a professional player to play. I mean, we all know 3 to 5 years is the average, and five, you're really doing good. But three is pretty much the average, so 13 years is pretty darn good.
Now, I hear you, but in effect, though, Pierre, his career ended in 95 in Dallas. He only played five games in 96. 97, he missed the entire season. 98, he missed the entire season. And then he played 16 games in 1999. So, in effect, he really only played 10 and a half years.
Yeah, it's subjective. I mean, your opinion is your opinion. My opinion is,
of course.
If we're talking about Super Bowls, man, and I mean, even 10 years is still pretty damn good, But anyway, the other point I wanted to make, man, is
Pierre, in fairness, I do think Charles Haley is a Hall of Famer. I just think I understand why those other guys got in ahead of him. So just go ahead.
Yeah. The other point I wanted to make, man, I'm sure y'all have already hit on it yesterday, but, I mean, the Seattle Seahawks, man, fast team, young, aggressive, college coach.
Big.
Reminds me of reminds me of a team back in the 90s. This is the thing. I'm not afraid of the Seahawks, man, because I'm going to tell you how you beat the Seahawks. I'm going to go with Joe, what Joe says. You negate that pass rush they have, and that back four will falter just like any other back four on any other 31 other teams. Now they're good, but they're not Superman. Now the other thing is hot, because I want to point out Earl Thomas, which was a Texas Longhorn. He got caught cheating up a couple of times. So you get a good run offense, and Earl Thomas will come up, and then you play action pass him. The other thing you do is you take advantage of that aggressive front four, and you do draw play or misdirection.
Well, that's what, Pierre? Remember, though, the Broncos tried to run four or five screen passes in that game, but despite the fact that Seattle's very aggressive up front, you're right, they 100% are. You couldn't be more right about that. They were all over it, and the Broncos tried to run some draw plays through them. That third and nine, they tried to run that draw play for the first time, and the Seahawks still managed to stop it.
Yeah, the Broncos were just – they were – if you read some of the articles post-Super Bowl, a lot of the players admitted that they weren't prepared for the crowd noise. They weren't really – I don't think they were prepared at all. So they came out sleepwalking. So execution was an issue for them from the start. So,
Pierre, the one thing I wanted to add to your comment, I really don't think you're giving the Seattle Seahawks secondary enough credit. I mean, I don't even think they need a significant pass rush. These guys are very good cover guys, and they stand on their own.
No, I agree that they're good. They're good, but we all know, man. I mean, if you're a student of the game, I mean, I was a cornerback in high school myself, and I had an opportunity to play college basketball. I didn't go play college football, but I mean, as a corner, man, you can't cover forever, dude. I mean, you cannot cover forever.
He is right about that.
And the disadvantage of me as a defensive player has is that I have to try to figure out where he's going. The offensive player knows where he's going, so. You can't cover forever, and if you get that quarterback, and the other thing, Peyton was running all night. He did not get an opportunity to sit down and go through his progression. So,
and the amazing thing, too, Pierre, is they got those pass rushers with under-market value contracts. And I think if there's one theme here for how the Seahawks built their team is they get value for everything that they do, whether it's the contracts they gave Cliff Avril, the contract they gave Michael Bennett, all those mid-round picks on defense that turned into Pro Bowl-caliber players. The Seahawks use their resources more successfully than any other team in the league when building their roster.
I agree. And this team, man, they're here to stay. They're here to stay. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win two or three, maybe four Super Bowls if they operate their cap right. This team is going to be a juggernaut. I mean, they're hungry. They knew how good they were. So, like, again, that sounds like a team I knew in the 90s. But you can beat them because we were beat. So you can beat them. They're not infallible. You go in and you smack them in the mouth and let them know you're not scared of them. And every team, you know, you can talk to their confidence too.
Thank you, Pierre.
All right.
And look, no team is unbeatable. He's 100% right about that.
Well, I mean, I can't really argue that. Obviously, each team has its own weaknesses, but I still stand by the strength of the Seattle secondary on its own. I think Pierre brings up a valid point. You're right. You can't cover forever, but if I'm Richard Sherman and I'm Maxwell, you have to understand the Broncos' offense is all about timing. That's how that offense is built. Everybody runs precise routes. Manning knows exactly where to throw the football before the guys get to their spots. If I throw Decker off his route at the line of scrimmage, that's mission accomplished somewhat. Then I don't have to worry about chasing him down the field. So they find ways to cover up maybe some of their individual weaknesses.
No,
that's
I
an
agree.
Effective defense.
And I think that's fair. But the point being is that it's still a team game. The secondary is helped by the pass rush is helped by the secondary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You need both. You can't have no pass rush and a great secondary or a great pass rush and no secondary because you're able to negate the strength if you can't hurt the other team in a different way. That's all I'm saying.
The bottom line is, though, every team that's gone up against the Seahawks for the most part has had trouble containing their pass rush, and that's why the secondary has played at a very high level. So, you know, I understand Pierre is laying out the blueprint. This is how you beat them, but it's not as if any team had a great deal of success. Even their three losses, you know, they weren't killed this season. You know, the Indianapolis Colts game was very competitive. Arizona, the game in Seattle where it snapped that lengthy home winning streak for the Seahawks, also a competitive game. To me, I look back at that contest, Seattle struggled in the red zone. That was the killer. You know, that may be the one weakness for this team. And even you saw it against Denver early on. Hey, this game could have been much more lopsided, John, the Super Bowl, if they didn't have to settle for those field goals early on, keep in mind. They punch it in. You know, Denver's down by even more. And there's no chance they're even making it competitive in the second half.
At ABR127, he says the 2011 Giants would have beaten the Seahawks. I want you to think about that, Lance. Ruminate on that a little bit. Let's take our final call of the show before we get to that question. I want you to have some consideration first. Give you a chance to digest and come up with your response. But Frank is in Tampa first. Frank, good morning.
Morning, guys. Great show as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
A couple quick things. Living down here in Tampa, I thought you might like a little backstory on Mr. Rice, one of the most despicable human beings to come along in a while.
Simeon that Rice, guy, you're talking about.
I'm sorry, did I say Rice? I'm sorry, Sapp.
Oh, okay. Warren Sapp, okay.
He is just, I mean, you see, a Super Bowl can cure many ills, and if they hadn't won, he wouldn't even be able to show his face here again. But the stories are just legion about him making children cry, you know, coming up for his autograph, you know, in a restaurant. I mean, it's just, you guys must have friends in the business. You have to talk to them. It's just unbelievable.
Well, Frank, John Schmelk's done the same, too, with his interaction with children. I just want to put things in perspective. But anyway, continue.
Right, and I happen to know the NFL writer who had to, you know, almost literally hold his nose to go in and argue for him last year. But
Ira Kaufman you're talking about?
I know Ira quite well, yeah. But he's this guy's a despicable human being. But, you know, his whole thing, for some reason, is he believes, and if you recall, we came one draft pick from the fellow Simeon Rice.
Yep.
And if you recall, that year there were like four decent players in the country, and we unfortunately had the fifth pick who became Cedric Jones. Oh, it's hard to say that out loud.
And then unfortunately, I think the Giants are hoping somebody was going to take, I think it was Lawrence Phillips, right, in the top four that year.
Exactly.
And he ended up dropping. I think it was Jonathan Ogden, right? Wasn't he one of the guys picked that year?
It was
Ogden. It was Sapp. Shoot. I can't remember the other two guys.
Yeah, but there were like four good players, and we thought for sure we were going to get Rice at the worst. And all of a sudden, we were just caught like with our tongues hanging out. And so his thing is Rice is much better than Strahan. Well, you know, Rice, I call him the King of Hearts because, you know, he's like a playing card. If he was any more one-dimensional, if you turned him sideways, you couldn't see him. I mean, he's like a matador, you know, with guys running by him. All he did is just blast off every play, you know, end up in the backfield, and the back would be, you know, 10 yards down the field or be a screen over his head. And but for some reason, he's just got a vendetta against Strahan. And this thing about Rice, who he thinks is, you know, the second coming of, you know, the best thing since white rice. So so just for a little background, he's not a very welcome person around these parts. The other thing, though, you know, just yesterday, real quick, guys, we were talking about it, and I agree with you guys that, you know, Bennett wasn't the second coming. But, you know, he was the closest thing that, you know, in the last couple years that we've had to, you know, what we need and the only, you know, the thing that was available. And, you know, by now, if we still had him playing 2 years in the system with Pope coaching him, you know, and there's a lot of what-ifs in this game, but, you know, you said yesterday he wouldn't have won us five more games. Well, he wouldn't have, but, you know, let's jump in our DeLorean and go back. You know, I was at the Cowboys game. You know, what if he made a catch there to win it? What about when, you know, Alligator Arms Myers, that big catch at the end of the game that, you know, could have put us in position to win that? We win one more game. We get in the playoffs. We get hot. We come on at the end. This could be 07-11 over again, and we spent this Sunday watching, you know, the G-men polish off Peyton's boys, you know, in the house that Eli built. It'd be the greatest season in history. So, you know, on such little things, great seasons are, you know, often hinge. So it's not, you know, yeah, he's not going to win five games. But, you know, sometimes these little things are what you need. And, you know, you need to look ahead and say, in that position, do we want Brandon Myers? You know, we don't. And so, you know, it's not... You know, it's not that these things, and you guys just know it's a 53-man team. You know, it's not just one guy here or there, but those one guys here or there add up sometimes to, you know, very big things. All we got to do is look at Tyree's helmet to realize how one little moment, you know, can change things. So if, you know, if Bennett had made one catch that gave us that one game that put us in the playoff, you know, that, you know, it could have been a whole different deal. We were that close, you know, the season hung by a thread. So, you know, that's all I'm saying. If we a little foresight, looking ahead with these contracts, and you know, because I know yesterday also you guys had said about about Beasley. You know, no, he wouldn't have signed in the 15th week, but you know, here he is. He's sitting on the bench in Carolina. His whole life and his season look like they're going down the drain. If we really thought we had something there, and nobody else knew about, you know, we could have, you know, made the arrangements to make the trade, had a negotiation with him. I mean, you could bring up two words, Steve Smith. You know, if a player blows a chance, if you give him a deal, you know, even a, I don't want to say second rate, but a deal that's not, you know, what he might get if he has a stellar year on the market, that's still enough money to set you up for the rest of your life. Otherwise, you could end up like a Steve Smith, and with his injury concerns and background and the fact that he's on the bench, for the life of me, I can't believe that he wouldn't have come to a reasonable agreement, you know, 1 or 2 weeks after getting over here, or even while he was coming, that would have put him on this team, and we could be thinking about all the other holes that we have, because as you guys said this morning, if we don't get him, I look out there, I don't see who else we're going to get, and we could be back where we started from this year, trying to hold our nose with a Dan Connor or something. And I'm sorry, I'll get off my soapbox, but I get going a little bit with these things.
It's all right, Frank. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Sure.
All right, call back anytime, Frank. Thanks so much. And look, we talked to Frank a little bit about that yesterday with the contracts, but remember, let's say the minute Beason gets here, you sign him to an extension, then what happens if he hurts his knee 4 weeks later and you have $5 million guaranteed committed to him, then all of a sudden your fan base wants to kill you because you wasted cap space on a guy that is hurt. So there are some negatives there. Keyshawn Johnson, Greg Hardy, the other two guys picked ahead of the Giants in that draft.
Looking back at the 1996
draft.
That
was the Simeon Rice draft.
Correct.
Right.
Who the year only, which Rice went.
Who rushed the passer really well, but as Frank said, 100% right, was not an all-around defensive end. A pass rusher, and that's pretty much it.
Well, but what was unique about that Tampa Bay defense is Monty Kiffin got guys that bought into the system and fit the system well. You know, when you look at the individuals as a whole, all of them didn't jump off the page. But when it was all said and done, they served their roles and they executed to perfection. And remember, Dexter Jackson was the Super Bowl MVP. It wasn't as if he was a household name. keep that in mind when you look back at that Tampa Bay D.
My man ABR127 has motivated me. Tomorrow's topic for the show will be your favorite Giants Super Bowl team. Which one do you think was the best? Interesting chat, I think. So,
in terms of whether or not the 2011 Giants, by the way, would have beaten the Seahawks, my answer is no.
I agree. I don't think they would have protected Manning enough, and I don't think that down-the-field passing game would have worked too well against that Seahawks secondary.
Telling you, the Seattle defense is in a league of its own. It really is.
Well, I mean, I would put it up there. You know, maybe not quite the 85 Bears or the Ravens in 2000, but, you know, like the Bucks from 2002. I put them right in the category.
Well, I'm not even talking about historical. I'm just looking at the current league right now. It's in a league of its own. I mean, who cares about the 85 Bears right now? I'm talking about right now. Right, you got to beat the Seahawks of present day. You don't have to beat the 85 Bears.
Head and shoulders above any defense I think we've seen the last 5 years. Though, the 40, remember this, too. The Giants in 2011 wouldn't have beat the 49ers if Kyle Williams doesn't, you know, fumble two punts.
Absolutely. Think about it. Ted Ginn, who we're talking about the Giants should have interest bringing in, he was hurt that game. If Ted Ginn plays, who knows how that game turns out.
Game-time decision that day, too, and he ended up not playing.
Special teams. I'm sure
they love to go back and activate him just so he can catch punts, even if he can't run.
Absolutely.
I think it was a hamstring for Ted Ginn in that game. Was it a knee? It might have been a knee.
May have been a knee.
I think it was a knee.
But I know that he had some knee issues during his career.
Could have been a whole different ball game.
And that's why it gets back to the luck factor when it comes to winning the Super Bowl. And once again, I'm not trying to diminish or downgrade what the Giants were able to accomplish.
Because every team that's won has gotten a certain amount of luck.
The Ravens, Jacoby Jones's catch because Raheem Moore was out of position to force overtime against the Denver Broncos last year. They had some lucky bounces. A number of teams.
Hey, look, the Seahawks got lucky. Was anything that they did had to do with the fact that on the first play from scrimmage, the Bronco center snapped it over Peyton Manning's head before he was ready? No, it's luck.
I mean, it wasn't a close game, so that wasn't that big of a difference maker, but I understand. There are things that you don't do, and all of a sudden it is gift-wrapped right to you. So, you know, that would be certainly an example. I would go maybe with the 4th-and-7 Russell Wilson play to Jermaine Kearse, where, you know, they don't convert on that play. All of a sudden, the course of the game against the Niners changes the week before. You know, that to me was a significant play where, you know, there had to be a certain level of execution. But, you know, you look back at the recent Super Bowl winners and look at the path that they took to win the hardware, you know, you could certainly find the number of bounces that went their way.
Unforced errors by their opponent.
Correct. So, you know, you need that luck to work in your favor when it comes to getting hot at the right time and riding that all the way to the Super Bowl. I don't know if Seattle had an overwhelming amount of luck, but there were a handful of bounces, even during the regular season, that went Seattle's way where, you know, they could have lost another game or two. And who knows, maybe that opens the door for San Francisco to get home field advantage.
Lance? Pleasure as always, my friend.
Sounds good.
And Lance will be joining us periodically throughout the rest of the offseason here and there. We'll also mix in a little Datino. We'll mix in a little bit of Eisen. And we'll maybe mix in a little bit of the beer, Dan Salamone as well.
Wow, look at that. See, we'll try to keep things fresh.
Yes.
Different perspectives.
We'll do maybe a couple out of town, all national stuff around free agency. We'll draft guys come on, and we'll have a good time. Lance, appreciate it as always, my friend. Get home safe.
Sounds good.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. If the office is open tomorrow, Big Blue Kickoff will be open as well, and we'll be starting at 9:30 on
Meaning the excuses are already built in, Giants fans, well, just to warn you.
It's supposed to be a bad commute tomorrow morning.
I can't criticize you as much as our tech guru on the other side of the room. Some people understand how to embrace the elements and make sacrifices. And others, not necessarily.
And our fans do as well. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you tomorrow morning, hopefully, on Giants.com. Otherwise, on Thursday, make sure you're there. See you one.
Have a good one.